Total Tuscany Podcast, episode 59. This is the podcast that brings Tuscany right to your front door. It's the Total Tuscany Podcast. Good to have you along. I'm Travis Justice with co-producer, co-writer, co-founder of TotalTuscany.com, the Italian in the group, and he takes great pride in that, the one, the only, Mr. Pat Capena.
Mr. Travis, how are you today?
You know, I'm very good. I'm a little jealous because my oldest daughter, Abigail, who, by the way, if you follow us on Instagram and just search Total Tuscany on Instagram, has done a Total Tuscany Instagram takeover because she is in Tuscany as we speak, Patrick, and she's spending the week in Florence. Today's actually her birthday, and she's going to Panzano to have dinner at Dario's and have a little bistecca. So I'm, and she keeps sending me pictures, and I'm like, okay, that's nice. Much like I did to you in December, I didn't think it would bother me, but I'm a little jealous.
It's painful, isn't it?
It is very painful. Yesterday she was in Siena, and I'm like, okay, because I don't think I've been to Siena 3-4 times. Every time I'm like, I didn't spend enough time in Siena. I think one of the next times I go back, I may just maybe camp out, get an Airbnb or a villa closer to Siena and maybe spend 3 or 4 days there, maybe to appreciate the city a little bit more.
It's such an easy city to get around. And there is so much to do compressed in a very small space.
Yeah. I mean, I literally could sit in the Piazza del Campo for like hours upon hours and just people watch.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, when we talk about our excursions to Italy, the great thing about the Total Tuscany podcast and TotalTuscany.com is not just, you know, we have our Total Tuscany experience and we encourage everybody to do that, but we also understand that, you know, people want to go on their own or they're looking for something different. But one thing doing this podcast in particular has done is really connect us with people who live, work, understand Tuscany, and I feel like we're part of a pretty close knit group of people in Italy. Don't you feel that?
Yeah, it's an interesting group, and with the people that we've been lucky enough to associate with, they are just fabulous.
Yes.
Fabulous people. This next guest is obviously someone who's been at this far longer than we have, and I'm looking forward to learning about some of her experiences and how she got where she is, but really some travel tips for us so we can make our experiences all the better.
And that's really what we want to do, is make everybody who wants to go to Tuscany, whether it's with us, somebody else, to have the best experience that you can in Italy. And that's where Linda Sorgiviani, am I saying that right?
I think that's right.
Sorgiviani. I always butcher the last names because I'm not Italian. Mm-hmm. I can't get it all. Linda, I'm sorry if I butchered the last name. But she runs ItalyCustomized.it, the website again, ItalyCustomized.it. And listen, she has a unique story. She's Australian. She also has citizenship in Italy. She's worked in London. She's got so much knowledge packed into her brain about what is just the best experience, whether you're in Tuscany, whether you're in Rome, whether you're in Venice, or anywhere in the country, she just packs that knowledge right in there, and she shares a lot of that with us.
Right, right. I'm looking forward to hearing some little tips about where to go, where to stay, where to eat. So
let's pick up our conversation with Linda on this edition of the Total Tuscany Podcast. Linda, first of all, thanks for taking the time to join us on the Total Tuscany Podcast. And it's always good to know when people we interview listen to the podcast. So thanks for joining us, and also thanks for listening.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you. I can tell your love for Tuscany and Italy from your podcast.
Now, you've been in Italy for quite a long time now. Pat and I first went 10 years ago in 2009, and we got the bug.
Uh-huh.
We were hooked immediately. Why do you think that is? Why do you think two blokes from America bring their families over and they're hooked like that? How does that happen?
It's beautiful, because I actually see that quite often with my tours. So it's just this, the pattern. Well, firstly, the beauty, you know, the every city, every region that you visit in Italy is absolutely beautiful. The food, the people, everything about it. A lot of the passionate aspects of perhaps, you know, in everyday life, when we're in our worlds, like you guys in the US and I'm originally from Australia, perhaps, you know, we don't have the relaxing outlook that Italians have about life. So that's just, it's what happened. It's the beauty. It's all of the above.
So how did this happen for you, Linda? How did someone from Australia?
From Australia arrive here? Well, I was actually in London for around 5 years before arriving in Florence. I have dual citizenship, so Italian and Australian, and I could speak Italian, understand Italian, but I couldn't, I always wanted to kind of, you know, having the citizenship, come and learn Italian. So a friend of mine in London recommended Florence. So I arrived in Florence and it was kind of the effect that Tuscany had on you, love at first sight. From the grey skies of London town, beautiful city, but arriving my apartment was on Via San Nicolò in the historical centre. I arrived in this little street to start a class, work at the Institute of Dante Alighieri. And I was supposed to be away from London for 1 month. And I ended up remaining in Florence for 2.5 months. And I returned to London. And after 6 months, decided to leave London town and come and live in Firenze. So it was, instinctive move and just, something that brought me to this beautiful city that is, still I'm very passionate about. I actually am married. I have two boys, Diego and Giulio, 8 and 11. And when I first arrived, I was studying. So one of the things that I used to do was I used to, in the afternoons, translate cooking classes because I could understand Italian like English. I just couldn't speak it very well. So I loved the way that you could, learn about and gain an insight about the culture through food. And I loved seeing people just really amazed by working with two different kind of categories of cooking classes. I used to work up at Villa San Michele, which is a beautiful luxury estate that overlooks Florence. And I would also translate for very rustic situations, like mothers or people that had this very simple pasta machines to make, amazing meals. So from there, I decided I wanted to continue this kind of journey, passionate journey. I studied at ACE, which is the Association of Italian Sommeliers. I also obtained a certification as a guide, and I also became a driver. So these three things led me to take people for many, many years all over Tuscany, taking wine tours. So we would go to, wonderful boutique wineries, day tours, half day tours. And I also worked for a couple of companies, American companies. One was called Bike Riders, Butterfield and Robinson was another one. I used to create itineraries all over Italy. So this then, continued the love of Italy with also having the opportunity to research other regions and learn about, the other cultures and the food, the wine, the history in other areas. So it just has been a continued passion to then leading to me in 2013. I was actually teaching at the Institute of Dante Alighieri, which now the lady that actually run that school owns another school of that certifies guides called Bottega Toscana. And there is where I met my business partner, and we became Italy Customized, basically an agency. In order to be an agency in Italy, you have to have a technical director, which is a direttore tecnico, and that's Alberto. So together, he is more the administrative side, I'm the creative side. We have created this tailor-made company, and Also, 5 years ago, I came in contact with quite a big company called Urban Adventures. And Urban Adventures is basically made up of a series of different tour operators all over the world. It comes from a larger company called Intrepid Travel. And Florence Urban Adventures is all of the tours that I have been leading for my clients over the past 17, 18 years, transformed into small group tours. So I've kind of gone into the small group industry, as well as still keeping to the tailor-made. And a year ago, we purchased also Rome Urban Adventures and Cinque Terre Urban Adventures. So it's all very exciting.
It sounds, and I keep saying this to a lot of our guests, that Travis and I are living vicariously through your story. I'm more of the planner, and Travis is more of the
creative
experience guy. And I'm curious. Did you always have a love of planning the trip, or was that something that was organic once you fell in love with Florence?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think it really the base of what I and then eventually Italy Customized have created is just this continued passionate journey that I have had and love that I've had for this country. So yeah, it just really was organic. You know, ideally my main goal has always been to show our clients another side of Italy, to show them the real Italy. And I haven't really compromised on that ever. So even if I have been asked, you know, to work with large companies, you know, giving our food tours basically in small group of maximum 12, for example, I actually don't compromise. I actually do say no, because I want people to have the most incredible experience. I want them to go away with understanding Italy in a very, an unforgettable way. So, the same, for example, even the Cinque Terre, in that area, we only do private, so that we can really show groups and a very authentic side of the five lands that have become so famous over the years, you know, so giving, educating and, you know, it's really incredible. I mean, for me, this is kind of the main aim of everything that we do. Passionate, unforgettable experiences.
You know, the experience is one that can last a week, up to a month, up to a year for some people. When we do our consulting, when people call us and say, "Hey, what should I do?" We tell people not to, you know, try to do the whole entire country in 2 weeks because they'll be disappointed. Mm-hmm. What's your ideal stay? Is it 2 weeks? Is it a month? What's your ideal? What do you recommend when people?
I really think it depends on what you want to do. So, for example, it's only your first time in Italy, it's obvious that you want to cover the main sites. And it's very difficult to, because of the, you know, it's the obvious Venice, Florence and Rome that people are going to want to see, which also is a very beautiful option. And so something like that I would recommend for 7 nights or 8 nights. When people send me, I also do the same thing. I try to recommend and tell people not to want to see everything. For example, actually in the past 6 months or so, we've had a lot of requests for Sicily and Puglia, and people are trying to integrate those two areas with still the main sites. So I'm saying, no, you know, those areas you have to have at least 6 nights, 7 nights to experience, because it's not, you know, just the coastline that you're going to experience. You have to go back in time and also experience, you know, the Greek Empire in Sicily, the Arab influences, the incredible intact amphitheatres and temples that are all over. So, you know, so I think that less can be more. I totally agree with you. Trying to just recommend people that they can always come back. So, you know, the experience can also be just sitting in a square with a glass of wine or a spritz and just watching the world go by. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be always on tours and seeing and seeing and seeing. And it can be challenging, because a lot of time it doesn't matter how much information you have online or, you know, whatever is advertised around the world about Italy, people still seem to think that they can see so much more in a short time than really what is doable.
Is there, and your website, by the way, it's fabulous. I spent some time studying.
Thank you.
I'm just curious, and I know you would take a small group and make it a wonderful experience, but is there in your is there an ideal size group that kind of lends itself to these type of immersion experiences?
Yes, there is. There is. I think that in terms of dynamic, in order to really attract the attention and understand, you can't really be more in a walking tour in the city centre more than 12 or 15. If you're doing a small group experience, like the wonderful experiences that you guys do, I would say, like, you know, the ideal is obviously 8, but you could still, you know, have a great attention, even if you have a small van that is like a 16-seater. So that is still doable and still able, as long as you can be able to interact with everyone. So more than, you know, 16, I would say, you know, it's way too many people. You lose people. You don't have a chance to interact. And losing the interaction when you're visiting Italy, it really is, you know, it's not worthwhile.
You have luxury packages, you have set planners, you also do a tailor-made. I got to ask you this because I think people are unique. And what is the oddest or most weird request you've ever had as a travel planner?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, it's that there's quite a few. It's difficult to react, you know, because of course you don't want to, you know, be too opinionated when you see some people's requests. But I mean, it happens to me quite often, you know, that people expect to be able to see so much in a short amount of time. So I mean, I think that, you know, it really amazes me that. Probably, I would say still today, the weirdest continued requests I have are coming from Rome, who want to spend like one day visiting Tuscany. So they want to go to Florence, Siena, San Gimignano, have a Chianti wine tasting, and it's staying in Rome. And you're kind of like,
that's impossible.
You know, there's so many ways that you can understand. You can see on Google Maps, and it's not easy to understand all of the valleys and the areas of Tuscany. But it's like, it's so impossible to be able to see. And I have actually had just recently family who have insisted. And I've said, you're going to be in the car the entire time. It's going to take you like 15 hours to see everything. You know, you can't deny people. You can educate them. You can give them as much information as possible. But, you know, then I've also had, you know, large groups who have wanted me to do food tours with headsets. You know, we go into these little tiny delicatessens, and like, how can you do a food tour with like an audio guide? I think that would be like the saddest food tour that you could ever do. How are you going to taste things? You know, you've got like the little speaker on and the thing on your face. It's like, that just would be the saddest experience I think ever. So it's, it continues to be, quite hilarious. I had a family once who asked me on the tour with their children if we could try not to include any naked monuments.
That's impossible.
I said, look, I'm going to try to arrange like little aprons around, you know, the fountain in Piazza della Signoria. But, you know, it's probably going to – Perseus will just kind of cover him with a little dress. I don't know. Trying to explain, though, and saying, you know, this – you know, it's all about mannerism, and it's not in any way need to be seen as offensive. You know, so you have to try not to laugh, because these kind of requests sometimes can come to you on the phone and you think, oh, my God, this person's actually just saying a joke. But they're going to laugh soon. And yeah, it doesn't actually, it's not actually the case. So yeah, it can be funny. I had a couple who were getting married, and they wanted to get married on the Amalfi Coast with a villa that looks Tuscan.
Oh.
So I say, well, it's that's, you know, because sometimes people, the imagery of Italy just kind of may seem a little Disneyland-like, you know, so you could just arrange anything. In February in the snow, we'd like a group of 20 to be able to crush grapes. Crush the grapes with their feet. Is there any vineyard where we could take people to crush grapes with their feet? I said, look, we could probably set something like that up, but not in February. Can't you just get grapes from somewhere else? Sorry, could you imagine a group of people in the snow in Chianti with their feet in like barrels of, grapes from, I don't know where, from Africa?
That's where you're nicer than I am, because as soon as that question came, I would just hang up the phone. I would just hang up.
It's just so funny.
You brought up a very good point, and I think this needs to be discussed, or it's not discussed enough when we talk about Tuscany, because you could be somewhere in Tuscany, and as the crow flies, you're a half an hour away from someplace, but in reality, as you take the roads, it could be an hour and a half. And I think when you bring up the travel times, it is so far, and people... I think people get frustrated when they go on a Tuscany tour because they're in the car so much or a van, but that's really no other way to avoid that, is it? You're going to spend a lot of time getting from San Gimignano to Volterra, kilometers. It's not that long, but when you're going through switchbacks and up a hill,
It is. It's so true, Travis. Yeah, it's not easy to explain that to people, and in fact, we often have people that want to spend a day in Tuscany, they want to visit at least 10 wineries. You know, you're like, oh, my God, like that's going to take you like 30 hours. You know, it's like there's no way. Everyone, wherever we arrive, firstly, they want to tell you the entire story of their life. So you cannot just walk in, taste wine and walk out. So, it's funny how the idea is often not realistic. Yeah. Yeah, I mean it's a hill. They're hill towns, you know.
Yeah.
And I have had clients on bike tours in Tuscany, not realizing there were hills. So we didn't realize that there were so many hills. They're like, what did you think hilltop towns were? You know.
That's interesting. I'm curious.
Yeah, it's really funny.
I'm curious what I think I can tell. You do the same thing we do. We like to talk with our guests and try to find out what would they like to see. But if you were approached by a small group of eight people and they said, we trust you, Linda, here's what you're asking for money. Please design for us what you think would be the best first experience in Italy. What would that be?
I think that a taste of from north to south is ideal. Saying that, I do agree with the Venice, Florence and Rome aspect, maybe adding in the Amalfi Coast. I think that though that area, but if you were to add Amalfi Coast, that would be more 9 days. That really gives you a wonderful understanding of Italy and experience. And that's simply because of the multiple opportunity that you have in all of those cities and regions. I think that in terms of countryside, like Tuscany, it's probably the most... in terms of experience, you could... you know, easily, as you guys do, spend, you know, a week in Tuscany and really experience Italy. But I think it just depends because sometimes a lot of my clients, you know, I work with a lot of agencies and these are people that it's like their first time ever in Italy. It's kind of their dream visit. So if you take out your Venice and your Rome and you just concentrate on Tuscany, a lot of the time they're not going to be sold on that. So, yeah, for me, I think that it's correct to show them the main sites the first time around.
Yeah, but I think after your first time around, you realize, like we did, we visited Rome. I'm glad I saw Rome. I never want to go back to Rome.
Yes.
You know, it's...
I have an ongoing love for Rome, but most people that come to me in Florence say the same thing as you. And because you can really, it can be just so overwhelming because you've got so many aspects to deal with, you know, in terms of, you know, ancient Rome, Vatican. When you take those two, when you take your Colosseums and your Vaticans away and you start going into the districts, you can really actually fall in love with the city. But it is very hard to distract people from those two major areas. It's like Florence, you know. It's interesting because I've lived here since the time of the Lire, when the internet even wasn't really, you know, we didn't really... Most of the guides that I worked with 20 years ago, we were called on cell phones. We didn't really, you know, email. It all kind of happened all of a sudden. So, you know, Florence has become so busy, which is so wonderful for us as tour operators. But I constantly am seeing that people are being directed, and that's probably the fault of agencies, I think, to the same experience. The lines already of the Uffizi Gallery and the Accademia, it's like the only two things that you can see in Florence, you know. So I think that we need to kind of educate a little bit our guests and give them a little bit more of an understanding of the other side of the cities, even the very famous cities, you know. And you know, to be able to, I mean, for me, I worked for many years for a company based in Miami, the Tuscan Way. And we actually created, I created a lot of food and wine experiences there. So we would do cooking classes in the morning and then we would do excursions in the afternoon or vice versa. And, I mean, it was the most, you could see just how much people adored being in the countryside. And when they were coming from major cities of Italy saying, oh, my gosh, we never would have even bothered with those cities if we, you know, we would have spent more time with you in Tuscany, you know. So it really depends on what you're looking for. If you are a food and wine lover, of course, you know, every region has incredible food and wine. But the region of Tuscany, I mean, it really just has, it's just the perfect experience of all of the above. So, you know, I really... It's hard for me. I love when people want to just do a region, you know, that's but again, saying that, even though I have many of my clients are clients that I've had for, you know, 15, 17, 18 years, they still want to come to the same cities, you know, and so it's not easy to kind of convince them to go in other areas.
You know, Pat's going to be there in the first part of April. I was there in December. It was the first time we did the Christmas season, and I loved it because there weren't a huge amount of tourists there, not until the weekends. And
yes,
it was just to go during the off times, you know, stay away from, you know, May and you know, in the times when everybody goes on vacation. Those, to me, are the ideal times to go. It may not be the best as far as weather goes, but, man, it's less congested for sure.
So much more beautiful. You know, when you think about the seasons of food, you know, November, October, November is the olive oil harvest. Yeah. Going out to the countryside, then you've got truffle season and you have the festival in San Miniato. And it's only Florence. So you have so many festivals, and then the decoration in the city centre is so gorgeous. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really, the experiences are incredible. I am actually amazed because when I first started working in tourism, really the tourists were here from March to October, maybe even, you know, more of April to October. Now there are actually a lot more people travelling in different times of the year, and I agree with you. I think it's great to kind of travel in the off season.
I'm intrigued, Linda. Your website focuses, Italy Customized takes care of children. You encourage families to bring their children. We did that the first time.
Yes.
We brought 17 people in April. Is there a for those guests that are listening to your podcast for the first time and hearing about Italy Customized?
Yes.
When would you suggest that a family bring children? What season is ideal in their mind?
I think that the spring is the most beautiful time because, you know, all the flowers are in bloom. The weather is perfect. I think that that is a beautiful time of the year. So I think, you know, from now until June, until mid-June, is one of the most beautiful times. And then in the lower, the other season would be from maybe September, October. When it's too warm, you know, kids just want to stay in the swimming pool in a villa in Tuscany, and the crowds. But yes, yeah, spring is and fall is definitely two great times to bring families. I think also to be able to interact and be able to experience the historical side of the cities with families. I think kids, you know, around, you know, from the age of 6, 7. I was amazed when my younger son, Diego, he was 6, I had to meet a guide, one of my guides in Naples, and it was the Christmas season, and I thought, oh my gosh, how am I going to do a 3-hour tour with a 6-year-old? He's going to like just go crazy. We ended up staying with this guide for 6 hours. Of course, we had lunch in between and amazing pizza in Naples that my son always says, let's go back and have a pizza in Naples, Mum. He was just interacted so well, you know. So I think that it is really important too when you're having these experiences with families to be able to have like a very good animated guide who is fun and informative and does different things. Like we do scavenger hunts with a lot of our families, or we give them like little quizzes to curiosities around the city so that they can understand. And that keeps them very interacted. I think, you know, sometimes it can be too much information for them. So I think that it's important to keep the fun side. You know, we take a lot of our families to wineries, you know, and one of the first questions of parents are, well, you know, the kids don't, I love that, the kids don't drink wine. Like us, our kids in Italy don't drink wine from the age of 8, which is not true at all. And so they're like, just letting you know that our kids don't drink wine. And I'm like, yeah, I know they don't drink wine. They're only 6. but see, for example, there we typically use a historical residence with a castle. So kids are really intrigued. We take them to the castle. We take them inside to the cellars that were once dungeons, and we give little stories, and they taste olive oil, and they taste salumi, and they taste bruschetta. So they interact in a way that it becomes, it's not just a wine tour for mum and dad. It's actually an experience that they'll remember, you know. So I think it's important to interact with them as well when they're traveling to Italy.
You know, we always talk about Siena. We always talk about Florence, Venice, Rome, Naples, the Amalfi Coast. I'm interested to see what your, you know, every hilltop town is unique and really cool. What are your hidden gems? To me, and I know it's not really a hidden gem, but I think Assisi gets overlooked a lot by some people. And I went to Arezzo in December, and I loved Arezzo as well.
Bellissimo, bellissimo, yes, bellissimo. So I love, and I make a point because when I was doing a lot of touring, when I didn't have my boys, I used to be in these areas every day. I mean, I think I've been to San Gimignano 3,000 times because, you know, Siena, San Gimignano, you do that every day for like 5 years. But my most, my gem is for sure the Val d'Orcia, the Orcia Valley. So Pienza, yep. Montepulciano, Montalcino. And I love Pienza. That smell of pecorino when you're walking through the streets, you know, just kind of oozing through the little alleyways. And then that incredible view on the Via dell'Amore, and also the different colors. So from spring, where you have like the rolling hills of wheat that is and kind of dotted with poppies, these beautiful red poppies. And then suddenly these blankets of wheat in September, October are kind of like a golden color. That is just magic. There's some really beautiful places to stay just in the foothills around the Orcia Valley where you can the colors, you know, it's something really incredible. And in that little area of the Val d'Orcia between Pienza and Montepulciano is the town that I absolutely adore. It's called Montichiello. Montichiello. It is so beautiful. And there's a wonderful lady that owns a wine bar. She's actually a sommelier. And you could sit out on this gorgeous terrace and just have a glass of wine and enjoy the peachy with either wild boar or tomato and basil, and just look out as far as the eye can see, you know, and in the distance you can see the highest hill of Montagnata. And it is just magic. It's something that it's a bit far from Florence for a day trip. It's about an hour and a half. But, you know, to be able to stay in that area, I think that is just gorgeous, gorgeous, you know, so beautiful.
Linda, the I'm so glad you're talking with us today. The your love of Italy just oozes out in your conversation, and you're bringing it to life. I'm just curious, in terms of the drives, what's the ideal? What's the ideal amount of time for your guests to be in a car? What's too long?
So I think that a day trip, you should, for example, from Florence, when I'm doing wine tours in Chianti, so I create only Chianti Fiorentina. I don't, for example, I take them as far as Siena if they want to include wine. So, yes, of course, we'll do the San Gimignano and Siena, but we'll do a couple of wineries within Chianti Fiorentina. If instead we have, you know, because a lot of people want to visit Montalcino because of the Brunello, so we will do more of a highway, Montepulciano, Pienza, Montalcino. That's 12 hours, you know. And now a lot of people want to go as far as Bolgheri. So I would say that is way too far from Florence, you know, because then you're going like, an hour, I think after at least an hour's drive, you need to stop somewhere, you know. So an 8 hour, 12 hour with stops is perfect. Anything beyond that is impossible to do. It's not possible to do. And so it's not, with day trips, that can be challenging because people often want to see as much as possible. But I think that, yeah, you have to convince them. There's so, I mean, you can just stay within a you know, 30-kilometer range of Florence. For example, there's a day trip that we do where we really just kind of loop around kind of Monte Fioralle, that beautiful town where Amerigo Vespucci was born. And then we head down towards Greve in Chianti. We visit an antique organic cheese farm. And we basically the entire day stay around the area of like 18 miles, you know, range. Because you can see so much. So, yeah, I think that sometimes you have to be careful with that, where people want to see. I have clients now, they're staying in, soon coming and staying in the foothills in Tuscany area, and they were talking about all of the different wineries they want to go to with it. Just basically people sometimes just open up the Wine Spectator and they look at, like, the top five and they want to go there, and you're like, okay, that's not going to be possible because it's just going to take too long. Because after you've had wine and you eat and you drink, apart from the amount of time that it takes you to do all that, it's too far sometimes. So I think that a day trip, max 8 to 12 hours.
That's good information. Do you see, is tourism still at an all-time high? Is it getting, or is it kind of falling back a little bit? What are you seeing in the tourism realm right now?
It's become bigger and bigger. I honestly, maybe it's because I've always worked in more food, wine experiences, like even during the phases and different times over these 20 years where people have seen a change, I have just seen it grow, become bigger and bigger. And I think it's because more people are, because you can see even on the market what's available in terms of food tours, more and more people are wanting to do food tours. So it's no longer, I remember some of the first cooking classes that I would translate 20 years ago, you would have like maybe families and there would be like two people that really weren't interested in food. So they would just kind of sit there and then they would eat at the end of the meal. You know, they would drink wine, they'd still have a good time. It's just like every itinerary, there's not one, I mean, it's very rare that I would find one itinerary of request from agents, direct people that don't ask me about doing a food tour. So this industry has become bigger and bigger. I have not seen any fall in tourism at all in regard to what I'm doing.
So when somebody reaches out to you, when somebody reaches out to you via your website, how long does the process take for you to work with somebody and put together an itinerary for them?
So one of the first things that I do is I speak to them. I talk to them on the phone. I think that is a really even though, you know, we have email and we have so much information that we can send to each other, the speaking to someone on the phone will give you that understanding really of what they want. They'll talk to you about the little things that they experience and thought about doing. And so that will just kind of, so that's the first thing, phone call. Then after the phone call, I kind of create a preliminary itinerary. Of course, we talk about budgets and so on as well. And so we typically work from 4-star boutique to 5-star luxury level. Then from there, yeah, it's like, you know, within, after the call, I basically have sent them a tailor-made itinerary after, 3 or 4 days. So once they look at that, it can take a week, it can take months. Sometimes, for example, I have clients who are already planning for next year, the year after. So they will just kind of like want to have an idea of what to do. So, sometimes, but typically people that, this is a thing that we've really noticed change in the tourism industry. It used to be like someone would write to you that they were coming the year after. Now it's like, okay, I'm coming in 3 months, so people, there's more people traveling, there's more availability, and so on. So yeah, it typically takes around a week to get everything confirmed and sorted. We don't organize the flights, but we give them recommendations. It doesn't take long at all to create the perfect vacation.
So majority of your clients, Australian, English, American, where are the...
American is my major client. That would be 90% of our clientele is an American client. An American client typically is looking for this kind of experience. Australians, usually they have a lot of time. Because we get so many weeks holidays in Australia, they're a little more adventurous and want to, typically drive, or they can do it yourself. It's a do-it-yourself client. Whereas Americans, they have less time. They want their most loved destination in Europe would be, Italy would be in the top five. So they absolutely love coming to Italy and they want you to organize everything for them. So most of the time they don't really want to drive. And so that is our top clientele, would be definitely American.
So outside of Italy, what's your favorite area of Europe?
I love Greece, the Greek islands, Mykonos, Santorini. Last year, we went to this little island where they filmed Captain Corelli's mandolin, this little tiny island. We're so lucky, because when you live in Europe, you can take flights and find really, really cheap flights to all of these destinations. My husband is also from Calabria, from southern Italy. So we spend quite a lot of time along the Ionian coast. So I also love the French Riviera. We drive up to Nice. It's like a 4-hour drive from Florence. We spend time in Nice. We have friends who live in that area. And love going to Paris in the winter. I haven't been back so much to London town, so more enjoying our time to travel is more in the summer time, where we kind of see less tourists, kind of July, August. My clients, for example, our food tours, our multi-day food tours, we actually close them for a couple of weeks in August because people aren't experiencing the authentic food experience in the middle of August because most of all of the Italians are at the beach.
It's funny
in the mountains.
It's funny that you mentioned Greece because Pat's daughter was in Santorini last week. My second daughter is actually in Greece as we speak, and then my oldest daughter is in Panzano today as we record. It's her birthday, and she's going to Dario Cecchini's for dinner tonight.
Che bello! Oh my gosh, that's wonderful! What a wonderful experience going to Dario's. The artisan of butchers. This is really something special to experience when you're in Tuscany. I mean, going to a little town that is not, that really wasn't as, just a little village town in Chianti that wasn't really so looked at until this wonderful butcher who celebrates Tuscan food and is such a great personality. It's a wonderful experience. She's going to have a wonderful birthday.
So, Linda, I'm kind of a foodie, and I'm just curious. First-time guests in Florence, where would you take them for dinner?
for dinner. Okay. Camillo, Trattoria Camillo, un borgo on San Jacopo, just next to the Ponte Vecchio, is a very beautiful place. I would take the authentic rustic on the first night. Osteria da Giovanni, Via del Moro, another wonderful place to have dinner. This is the brother of I Latini, the famous I Latini butchers. And there the meat is just divine. So these are kind of the two more rustic, original places that I think would be kind of your ideal first night in Tuscany. It kind of makes me laugh because when you ask me that, it always brings me back to a lot of people when they visit Tuscany. I remember I had a client for a week and we were like, you know, truffles and we were having ravioli. And he just one day said to me, can I just get spaghetti with meatballs? You know, he just wanted to have like the original kind of American Italian experience. And that's a lot of the time what we often say to a lot of our clients when we start the food tours, you know, like the idea of Italian food is so much integrated of who our immigrants were, you know, Sicilian, Calabrian, spicy food, cannoli. Where can I get a good cannoli? You know, in Florence, you're like, well, now you can get it at Cappuccinale because there's a Sicilian little stand. But I mean, years ago, you couldn't get a really good cannoli in Firenze. So, you know, it's really quite funny because this Italian food no longer exists. It's actually regional food, you know. So there's a lot of great places now in Florence. It's become also somewhat contemporary, which is quite particular. It's getting more and more difficult to recommend people to where they can get a good bistecca. Whereas, like you said, your daughter that's going to Banzano is perfect. And I mean, most local friends of mine, if they're going to have a bistecca, they go to the butcher and they make it at home, or they go to Tuscany. You know, they do kind of on the weekend, they go on to have a bistecca. So yeah, Firenze is becoming more and more difficult a little bit to get like the best Chiana beef experience. But there still are some really great places to experience the beef.
It's interesting because it sounds a little much of a cliche, but that first taste of a real Italian rustic food is, it's almost like your first kiss. I don't think you ever forget it.
Yes, è vero. That is so true. That's really important to set the pace because you can be, you know, you think that with all of these different channels that we have online that it is easy to find something authentic, but it still isn't, you know. And so that could really, yeah, you're right. It can make or break your experience. I totally agree with you. The idea, this beautiful romantic idea that we have when we first arrive in Italy of sitting in a piazza and having a great meal, it really isn't that at all, you know. You know, Italians, they don't really like sitting outside and eating because they're fixated with the cold. You know, they always have to have the scarf on and whatever. So the most authentic restaurants are going to be a little hole in the wall because that's where Italians typically eat. They don't eat in a grand square. They have an aperitivo in the grand square, you know, or a little espresso in a grand square. So, yeah, this is all little tricks that you have to explain to people because otherwise, yes, they can really go wrong and not have that authentic experience.
ItalyCustomized.it. That's ItalyCustomized.it. Linda, just a fascinating conversation. We appreciate you taking the time. The time difference is always kind of hard to navigate, but it's been a great 40, 45 minutes, and we appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I hope that we see each other when you come to Firenze. We'll have a glass of wine together in the piazza.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Pat, you may not realize that, but this is one of the longest podcasts we've done. That was like a 45-minute conversation.
Really?
Yeah.
It didn't seem like it.
It didn't. And you can just tell, isn't it great when you have a passion? If you're listening to this podcast, you've obviously have a passion for Italy and Tuscany in particular. And I hope you can tell we do too. But when you have those conversations with people that are passionate about it, it's you can just talk forever.
Well, for Linda, planning and taking people on their trips, whether it's their first or their 20th trip to Italy, you can tell it's not just a business this is what she loves to do.
And that's what makes it great. It's italycustomized.it, italycustomized.it. Of course, we want you to follow Total Tuscany as much as you can. And that's why you can follow us on Twitter at Total Tuscany, on Facebook at Total Tuscany, and on our Instagram page at Total Tuscany. We're going to keep rolling along with more podcasts to come. If you have any suggestions for us, you can also reach out on our website and email us info@TotalTuscany.com. That's info@TotalTuscany.com. If you need help with your travel plans, suggestions for your Tuscany excursion, feel free to reach out to us at any time. I'm kind of hungry now, Pat.
Let's have a little pasta.
Some peachy and some Chianti and just sit back and enjoy the day. Thanks for listening to the Total Tuscany Podcast. We'll be back again with more stories from Tuscany and Italy and just bringing it all to your home. Again, TotalTuscany.com. For Pat Campagna, I'm Travis Justice. We'll talk to you next time on the Total Tuscany Podcast.